This is Jim Engster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll visit with the East Baton Rouge Parish District Attorney, Hiller Moore. He'll talk about what's going on in our community, including the murder rate, the Truce Program, and much more. Also, Hiller Moore on the prospect of non-unanimous jury verdicts going by the wayside, and the Max Gruber Act that was passed in the legislature. And the DA will comment on moves by Apple to apparently thwart law enforcement as they try to get into phones that are involved in crimes. And we'll hear from Mark Ballard, the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Advocate. Mark Ballard on next week's special session, the seventh one in 29 months. We're now 16 days away from the fiscal cliff. What gives at the Capitol? We'll talk about it with Mark Ballard. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is our producer, and our guest in studio is Hiller C. Moore III, the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish, a Democrat in a city that has elected many Democrats, including the mayor, Sharon Weston Broom. But partisan politics aside, Baton Rouge is one of the most violent places in the United States. And last night, Hiller Moore had a late night because there was yet another murder in our parish. This one in a heavily traveled area, College Drive, near the Fairway View Apartments. What happened?
Well, right now, the matter is still being investigated by the Baton Rouge police detectives, and they're following up on a lot of leads. A lot of hard work last night, but apparently a young lady walking down College Drive was shot multiple times, but not kind of like to leave it at that because it is being investigated now, and a lot of moving parts going on right now.
I think that's number 48 for this year.
Yeah, it's my recollection. It's 48. You know, it may be for the city. I'm not sure about the parish, but for sure in the city it's 48, and we've had several justified and a few negligent homicides that, in addition to that.
But over 100 would be the projection. With we still have 16 days left in the first half of the year.
So yes, last year, you know, we finished with 104, which is a terrible number. It was the highest one that I can recall. So we're probably on pace to be, at this point, maybe 8 or 10 over that number. But hopefully we can do some things to stop it.
And to put this in perspective, there was a lot of discussion about Oregon because it, like Louisiana, is the only state with non-unanimous juries being possible for convictions or acquittals. But in Portland, their largest city, a city bigger than Baton Rouge, 20 homicides last year.
Yep, completely different community, completely different history than we have. And, you know, for that office, that size, the district attorney there is a friend of mine. We visited that office to look at their computer system, how they process cases. And the amount of assistant DAs, they had doubles ours, and they only have, only have 20 homicides. And they're complaining about their workload when we had 104. It is something to look at and compare.
Now, Hiller Moore worked as an investigator for many years. He's, I'm sure, been at thousands of murder sites, including the one last night. And we've talked about this before. I can't imagine how this doesn't take its toll after a while.
You know, surely it does. I guess you try to wake up the next morning and get back. This is work, and that may not make sense to a lot of people that listen, but it is work, but it is a person. And you know, just take last night when you see a young, beautiful lady who's killed. You know, it's hard to stand there and look at it, although it is your work to do. And you have to be non-emotional when you handle these cases, or you just couldn't handle it, especially after 44 years of seeing a lot of people have been killed in every kind of way imaginable. So surely it takes your toll. Some stand out more than others just because maybe it reminds you of someone in your family or a friend. Some are more gruesome than others, but it's still somebody's family member regardless, and it's a death.
In Portland, 20 murders for the whole year, 20 homicides. Last year in Baton Rouge, just for domestic violence incidents, 14 homicides.
Correct, and we're not on a good, or we're in a, I guess, equal or
six.
Maybe slightly, I think it's five, potentially, five or now possibly six. So we're on the same pace, so hopefully we're going to slow it down a little bit.
How effective was the much maligned BRAVE program?
Well, the BRAVE program was not maligned other than for the ending of it and the finances and the money that was left over. And, attempts to use the money. Nationally and in the people that we deal with on a daily basis from around the country, they wrote about Brave, and Brave was always the place that people wanted to come see. And, in fact, they did come see how we did what we did. So it was from a standpoint of homicide and homicide reduction, and we're talking about group violent homicide, not other types of homicide. It's, that wasn't that focused on that. It was highly successful.
And now there is a truce program, which is, I guess, kind of an offshoot of the Brave program. How will it work?
Actually, it'll work the same, other than there won't be a blending of any kind of confusion between the social service side of the group violence reduction strategy and the law enforcement side. You need law enforcement to be effective and to put people in jail that shoot or kill people. That will always be there. That side of any type of group violence reduction will just be called Baton Rouge Police, East Baton Rouge Sheriff's Office. The, I guess, kinder, gentler side of trying to coax these people out of their way of life, getting them help, getting them jobs, education, mental health treatment, that'll be under the guise of truce.
Now, I suspect most of these homicides involve firearms.
Yes, probably 95 to 98% have been gun violence homicides.
Is it possible to have gun regulation that would keep guns away from the so-called bad guys and preserve the Second Amendment privileges that many people treasure?
You know, I really don't see it. What we really need to worry about is illegal guns, and it's not lawful homeowners that have guns and have guns for the right reason and for recreation. We're looking at young kids. We're talking about 17, 18, 20 years old that are getting guns out of our cars. That's where they're getting these guns from. And once they get them, then they trade them on the street, sell them on the street, and that's the guns that are being used by these folks to kill each other and to shoot at each other. So it's really guns that are illegal from their standpoint of they're carrying the guns, not a legal weapon. And so that's the problem we have. I mean, this is more of a people problem than it is a gun problem.
But they're taking guns from cars, you say?
Absolutely, taking guns from cars, and when they find one that is effective, and they're stealing very good, high-quality guns. And we're able to match guns through the shells, casings that are left behind, through the National Integrated Ballistics Information Network system that we have set up here. And we have a really good one here. And so we're able to match shell casings, and if we're able to find that gun that matches different shell casings in a person's hand, then we know we have someone that is a potential multiple killer.
Is it a good idea to leave a gun in a car?
No, we always suggest that if you take the gun to and from your home in your car and take it out of your car, bring it inside. It surely is convenient to leave one inside your car. But we see in these burglaries, and this past couple of months, we've had a lot of burglaries around Baton Rouge, and you'll see these folks that are walking the streets, they'll just touch on the handle and see if the door opens. They want the easiest way out. What's also been somewhat dangerous, we see on some of the homeowners' videos, it appears as if some of these folks are holding something in their hand, potentially a gun, so it's dangerous for the homeowner to go outside and confront them. So we would always suggest calling the police and not confronting them yourselves, because you never know what they have or what they took out of your car or somebody else's car.
What about drugs? Are they a culprit as far
no
as
doubt.
Murders?
No doubt. So, we may have killings that are involving a $10 bag of weed or something like that, but these people that are doing the killing are group members. So they may be fighting over a beef between themselves, or someone said something about a girl or a small amount of drugs, but they're killing each other, and they're different group members that are back and forth. But surely drugs drives everything that we do.
And you, of course, are trying to solve murders. And last time we talked, many of them remain unsolved.
The Baton Rouge Police and the Sheriff's Office, they do a decent job at what they do. And when I say the word decent, I don't mean that in any disrespect. It's when you solve cases around 50%. That's a pretty good standard nationwide. And Baton Rouge Police and the Sheriff's Office are up there with the nation's best on solving cases. But people that are victimized in their families, they surely would rather 100% than 50%.
Yeah.
So, but they do a good job. But, what they lack is they lack manpower. They only have 8 or 9 homicide detectives for that number that you just mentioned, plus all those the year before that have not been closed, plus every suicide and plus every heroin overdose, which matches the number of deaths that they go out and they investigate, plus extra duty, all the other things that they have to do. They are just overworked. And also the lack of information from the street. Every homicide that goes down, somebody knows something, mm-hmm. and the street knows something. We need credible evidence. They need the community's help.
877-217-5757 is your number for District Attorney Hiller Moore. He's with us for a while longer, and, of course, he has his hands full. Another murder last night, number 48 for the parish this year, headed for another record number, unfortunately, unless something happens good in the back half of the year. This truce program, does it have the potential to thwart a lot of the problems?
I think it can be just as effective as the Brave program was. And as you know, when we started Brave in 2012, the killing, we had 84 homicides that year. It's a big number, big year. Mm-hmm. However, we've surpassed that. And the following year, I think it was reduced by 20 homicides. So the number went down extremely quickly. So I think that we can do the same. The issue we're going to have is we're trying to raise the funds to have the supervision of Dr. David Kennedy, who you've seen and talked about before, and John Jay School of Criminal Justice, and it's called the National Network for Safe Communities. They do this all over the country, and they're successful wherever they go, as long as you have the money and the manpower to do it.
We'll return after this brief pause with more from Hiller Moore. He'll be with us for much of the hour. Mark Ballard of the Advocate at the Capitol is monitoring what's about to happen. Budget, of course, could affect DAs in our state. We'll talk with Hiller Moore about that and more. And again, your number is 877-217-5757. You can reach us by email talk@talklouisiana.org. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana on WRKF. Your number is 877-217-5757. Locally, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. And talk@talklouisiana.org is our email address. For Hiller Moore, the district attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish. Nancy on Segan Lane. Hi, Nancy. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hello, Mr. Moore.
Hi, Nancy.
I am a social worker and also a drug counselor. And I would like to know how many social workers, case managers, or program coordinators that render services to individuals in which you speak of are you going to hire?
So I'm not exactly sure of the question, but I'm just going to assume for the purpose of the question, if you're talking about the truce program. So that program is privately funded, and in the funding, we have funding for one program manager and one caseworker, and that's what we have had for some time. That's what the budget calls for. So what we try to do in the kids that come through truce, and the goal is from the Brave program, it was by grant, it was 20 to 25 youngsters that we were trying to serve per year. So we're trying to do a lot more with truce. So these two that we actually have the funds to employ will work as much as they can with these kids on the front end, and then eventually work with outsiders. Hopefully maybe someone like you, if you could call if there's any services that you could help us with, would surely like to take that. So we try to reach out to those services that are free of charge to us and to anyone else, because our budget is extremely limited. It's by two donors that have given us the money for this, and so we'll work within our budget. But you point out, a really good point, is that we surely have a lot of people who need help, and it's not just needing help for one visit or one or two times. This is long-term assistance, as you know. And we're finding in a lot of these cases that transportation is just such a big issue, getting these people to and from a spot to get the help and that you would probably provide. So that's always been a challenge, and I'm sure that's going to remain a challenge in this program as well and any other things that we do.
Thank you, Nancy. 877-217-5757 is your number. There's a story in the New York Times, Apple to close iPhone security hole that law enforcement uses to crack devices, and in the story from the newspaper of record in our country, Juan Hiller Moore is quoted in the story saying, it says, Hiller Moore, the district attorney in Baton Rouge, says his office paid thousands of dollars to unlock iPhones in five cases since 2017, including an investigation into the hazing-related death of a fraternity pledge at LSU. He said the phones yielded crucial information, and he was upset that Apple planned to close such a useful investigative avenue. What's going on?
It's real troubling. It's, you know, we're playing this cat and game mouse again with them. And so if you remember, our issues started with the Brittany Mills case. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to get into her phone. She was the lady that was killed, that was pregnant, whose child she was carrying died as well. And she had all we had left was her phone. And we asked Apple, sent subpoenas, sent search warrants to get into the phone. They said they could not get into the phone because it was designed that way. We waited around, tried to get the assistance of the FBI. They told us they were going to assist us eventually. San Bernardino hit. They then got into that person's phone in San Bernardino, and then Baton Rouge, actually, that Mills case was the next one that the Israeli company Cellebrite, who I believe the FBI used, was the one that helped us get into that phone. So following that, so Cellebrite then developed a technology to get into certain types of cell phone operating systems. And obviously they get into it through ways that I have no idea. It's way above what I could articulate. But somehow they pound the phone with different numbers and equations to unlock, to get that passcode unlocked. And so they're now able to do that up to certain iPhone 8s or whatever it is. And that technology was used to assist us in the LSU case.
And you eventually, I think, got into Brittany Mills' phone, didn't you?
We did, and but, you know, it's really, which really shocked me, and that phone was the first one. Just the volume of information that's on anybody's phone, pick anybody, yours or mine.
Oh, yeah.
It will fill up this room, and it takes months to go through.
And unfortunately, that's one of the unsolved cases.
Yes, unfortunately. It's you know, real frustrating to a mom, Barbara Mills.
877-217-5757. Ray in Prairieville. Ray, good morning. You're on the air with Hiller Moore.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. I have just a two-sided question for Mr. Moore, and appreciate the program, by the way.
Go ahead, Ray.
We probably both realize that most of these homicides are committed by felons with guns. Do we need stiffer penalties against felons carrying guns, or do we need better enforcement, or possibly both? And I'll take my answer on the air, Jim.
All right, that's a really good question. I do believe that we have sufficient laws that are in place. I think from a practical standpoint, though, when the police receive a gun and they take a gun off of someone, it's harder than you think to convict on that person of that gun. Everybody has an excuse. The gun is normally not in the pocket of the person you're looking for, but in a car somewhere, and there are three or four other people in the car. One's a felon, the other's not. Always the felon denies ownership of the weapon or knowledge of the weapon. Somebody else may take credit for the weapon, or no one does. So then that leaves us with trying to swab all of those individuals for DNA, then taking the gun, swabbing that gun for DNA, then running that gun through the crime lab to test for DNA. And normally when we have a gun, you have multiple mixtures of DNA on the gun, and you can't tell which one is which. You can't tell when the DNA was placed on the weapon. Makes it very difficult. And the crime lab is overwhelmed with DNA with rape cases and homicide cases. So I think the laws are effective. We have to make better cases. On your other point about felons that are killing people, we have found, I think we took last year's killings of both defendants and the victims, and the overwhelming majority of either the defendant or the victim had been through the Louisiana correctional system at one point or another. So that is some telltale sign that we need to take a look at.
877-217-5757 or talk at talklouisiana.org for Hiller Moore. We talked before the show about this pending change that would involve guilty verdicts for non-unanimous, actually it would require a unanimous verdict for guilty or acquittal, and it goes before the people of Louisiana this fall, and the DA's Association is apparently not going to fight it, and it looks like it's probably on the road to passage, but Hiller Moore, you've been out in the trenches. Certainly this will involve in more hung juries.
So, you know, taking a look at the issue, one thing that we can't refute is that Louisiana and Oregon, at least for right now, we're the only states that have a non-unanimous jury. So every other state, every other federal government, the federal government, sorry, uses the unanimous jury. England and Europe, where we came from, started with unanimous juries, then went to 10-2, then they went back to unanimous. Now they're moving back to non-unanimous juries in Europe, which is kind of odd. When you look at the research is kind of all over the place, whether you get a better, for lack of a better word, outcome, one that people can accept, whether it's unanimous or not. So I think that this is something, if it does pass, and I think, you know, for me, I'm going to leave this up to people to decide, how do you want to be judged? How do you want others to be judged? Unanimous or 10-2, let them decide. We're going to live with whatever the people say. They do it in every other state in the federal system. I think you'll see more hung juries to the tune of 3% to 6% more. We won't have a lot of hung juries, but I think you'll see an increase in that. I think you'll see the jury work differently. The one thing that is kind of scary is that maybe as a defense lawyer, as I once was, do you argue just for that one juror? Do you pick your entire 12-jury person based on one person? So one person can surely change it. But, you know, again, I think we're going to deal with that.
And of course, in federal trials, it does require unanimous. And we've seen, for example, former Governor Edwards, he had a hung jury 11-1 for acquittal back in 1985, and he was retried, found not guilty the second time, but cost him dearly politically. We'll talk more with Hiller Moore, your number 877-217-5757. The news. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Hiller Moore with us for another segment, the District Attorney for East Baton Rouge Parish, 877-217-5757. As noted last night, there was another homicide in the parish, and Hiller Moore, anytime it happens, he gets a call and is on the scene, and he had a late night and then came in early today to join us, and we're glad he's here to provide his insights on what's happening in our world. 877-217-5757. The Max Groover Act passed the legislature. Did you think that was a good piece of legislation?
Absolutely. I think that had we had the legislation in place prior to this happening, we'd probably have some different charges and be in a different position. But, you know, we deal with what we had. And but suddenly, I think it's great. I think it's probably one of the best in the nation now. And it looks at everybody from the fraternity member to presidents to the university. It looks at everyone. It's not just that act, but it's the other, I think, one or two other acts that were involved that looking at teaching kids and continuing to educate kids about dangers of this. And I think that was really good legislation, especially for the parents. You know, your heart goes out to these people. I've been with them many, many, many times on this legislation. And Valerie Hodges and those that moved as far was really good.
And you remember Ben Wynn.
Absolutely.
21 years ago at Murphy's.
Yep.
Almost 20 years to the date between Ben Wynn and Max Groover.
Sure was.
And you were involved in that case.
I was on the other side of that case. I was actually a defense lawyer in that case. So, kind of familiar with it, this situation all the way around. Whatever way you look at it, it's tragic.
You were a member of a fraternity, correct? No?
No, I was a GDI.
I was a
GDAM independent, but I was not. I had no funds or...
Well, I've had some people say that the fraternities as a whole are getting an unfair rap.
No
doubt.
Because
most of the time, these kinds of things don't occur.
No doubt. It's this is very few occasions like this, and it's, you know, thank God. But this type of behavior should never happen. It's completely avoidable.
How challenging is it going to be to prosecute these individuals?
You know, every case is challenging, but obviously this case was presented to the grand jury. You saw how many people were arrested. Then you saw how many people we whittled down that the grand jury, we presented them what we had, and they came back with the indictments that they had. One negligent homicide, the rest are hazing and other kind of related instances. And hazing, as you know, at the time is a misdemeanor. So we have mainly all misdemeanors and then one felony.
Your budget, you've commented that you would like to have more resources and it would be effective in fighting crime, but your budget could be even more in peril as a result of this so-called fiscal cliff. What's going on with it?
Yeah, pretty shocked and disappointed. So we have 42 district attorneys around the state, and the entire amount of money that the state of Louisiana pays district attorneys to do what they do is $41 million. And in the proposed budget, they propose a total budget of $5 million. And I'm not good at math, but I think it's around 85% or so that the reduction to us. So I would have to lay off 85% of my people if the budget were to be passed as is, which I know it will not. And I know they were wrangling over the budget, and it looked like they were going to be $5 million short, which, again, would significantly impact our office and our ability to prosecute cases and giving notices to people that they would be on leave or be laid off.
A few more minutes with Hill or Moore. If you can get in under the wire, 877-217-5757 or talk@talklouisiana.org. Tracy at the Capitol says, do you have any possible interest in some point in seeking the job as Attorney General?
I mean, I love the job that I have, and I love it because of the people that I get to work with that are professionals in my office and the people we serve and just working with the police officers and sheriff's deputies and all the other law enforcement agencies. I'm not a politician. I had to run for this job once. I'm looking forward to running for this job again in 2020. You know, it's going to always be a challenge. Things are changing real rapidly now, as you know. And so I'm looking forward to continuing the work that we're doing now with the people that I have in office and hopefully new ones that come.
I remember a few years ago there were people asking you if you would be interested in running for mayor.
Yeah. You know, I had no desire at that time. I still have no desire. I like the job that I have. And I hope to be able to continue this job.
How closely does the DA work with the mayor's office?
You know, it just depends on the issue. But surely budget and money-wise, and then particular crime issues or crime-fighting issues where we need money and funds, surely work with that office. And, you know, work mainly with the chief of police and the sheriff, and more so than we do on a daily basis with the mayor's office.
And yesterday, the Metro Council decided not to keep bars open till 4 in the morning. Did you think that was potentially a minefield?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I have respect for Lamont Cole. He was actually with us at a graduation earlier in the day. I did not even know that was on the docket there, but surely that would cause us some significant issues.
Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Hiller Moore.
Yes, Mr. Moore, it sounds like you're saying that the Republicans in the legislature – we'll have to choose between law enforcement and prosecuting criminals and their adherence to the Grover Norquist no taxes, no matter what pledge.
I'm not that familiar with the last part that you're talking about, but you know, it really puts. I think that it really puts a lot of people, including DAs, in a really bad position to call our representatives, like I did yesterday, to say, "Look, we're in a bind here. We really need something passed," but it's really distasteful to be put in a position where you have to ask or even think about raising more taxes to do what you do. So, yeah, no, that's absolutely that. Everyone seems to be put in a pretty good trick bag right now.
It is curious. In today's advocate, two members, high-ranking members of the Jindal administration, Tim Barfield and Paul Rainwater, very high members of the Jindal ranks, are saying that a sales tax is necessary.
Wow. You know, look, we surely would like to be funded. Everyone needs more money as things are going on. As you know, with the murder rate, we are struggling to keep up. But, you know, we really need to focus on what's our priorities in the state and put the money where the priorities are and get rid of the things that are not priorities. And that's a bigger job than I'm able to handle at this point or even know more to talk about.
All right. A couple questions from listeners. Kristen asked about the St. George movement. Are you taking a position at all on this?
No, that's strictly for the voters of those areas to decide.
And another one from Holly in the Garden District asking about the link between education and crime. Is there a definitive link there?
No doubt. Not only that, but also, you know, poverty, educate. But education is key to everything we do. So Holly is right. She obviously knows. And if we had better educated folks, we have jobs out there for people, but you need to have the education and training. You have to be drug-free. You have to have transportation to be on time. Education is the key to it all.
All right. Here's one from George reflecting on previous appearance you had with yours truly about how now you're able to track shots fired.
Oh, yes.
How effective is that?
Shots ShotSpotter technology is 100% accurate, or 99.9. Unfortunately, we only have 6 square miles of ShotSpotter coverage for a city of, 300 square miles. And so we do not miss a shot that's fired in ShotSpotter coverage, whereas compared to other areas that where there's no ShotSpotter coverage, we receive citizens' complaints at the rate of 18%. We're missing a lot of shots fired and a lot of shell casings that we're not able to get to because we're not able to cover our city with ShotSpotter technology.
Do people just fire weapons just to
no doubt.
Fire them?
Yes. Oftentimes you'll see the ShotSpotter will give you the location and the link, give you a GPS map, and you'll oftentimes see where a lot of shots fired are in an open field, on the river. But those things come down, projectiles come down, they hurt people. Mm-hmm. So obviously it's dangerous.
Now, last night we had this homicide on College Drive. Quite often we get more lathered up when it happens on College Drive than when it happens on Cadillac Street or North Baton Rouge. Is that a factor in what's going on in our community?
Not at all. So, I'll go to a murder on Cadillac and I'll go to a murder on College Drive. I was with the chief of police last night on College Drive, and I was on a murder with the chief of police on Cadillac. We were both on.
You will, but as far as public perception, though.
Oh, so, I mean, that's driven by by people like you, maybe in the news that drive that more. But, yeah, I would think, depending on who you are, where you are, you may get a little more alarmed at one on College Drive than you would on Cadillac.
Well, yeah,
however,
well,
the truth of the matter is, when I'm going around talking to business people, they don't care what street it occurred on. They know that it affects their business. I've even heard it from LSU coaches in high-ranking departments and places that sports that do very well, that we are negatively impacted by homicides, and particularly homicides that occur in 7802, which is really close to LSU. Parents may be afraid to send their children here. This drives a lot of what we do, so it's a problem for everybody. I don't care where you live, how much money you make, what neighborhood you live in. I don't care where it occurs. It affects everybody.
Are those still the hot zones, 70802, 70805?
I have to take 70805 off the list. I mean, 70805 is where Braves started and put their footprint down. 70805, probably of the zip codes, Jim, is probably now number five, four or five.
And
702
is
the hottest.
Because of Brave. 70802.
Well, yes. No, I cannot tell you specifically 05 because of Brave. Something happened. But 02 now, which they call the bottoms, the south side off of Highland Road, not far from LSU.
Near LSU?
Is the hottest spot in Baton Rouge.
70802.
Yes, sir.
877-217-5757, Daryl on Plank Road. Hi, Daryl. You're on with Hiller Moore.
Yes, sir. Good morning to you and your guests. I just had a question. I understand that you want to leave the issue of the unanimous jury to the people. But a number of convictions that were overturned and a number of convictions where DNA evidence has exonerated people, a lot of those initial convictions were 10 to 2. And perhaps if it would have been unanimous, maybe an innocent person might not have spent maybe 27 or 30 years in jail.
That surely is always a potential. DNA surely has changed a lot of things. Daryl, the research is kind of all over the place when you look at 10-2 versus 12-0. And we've looked for the research, but that surely is a possibility.
We'll spend a few more minutes with Hiller Moore after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Mark Ballard is on deck, the Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate. We're finishing it up with Hiller Moore, the DA for East Baton Rouge Parish. And Charles in New Roads has been waiting patiently, and I wanted to get Charles in before we part company with Hiller Moore. Charles, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Moore.
Hey, Charles.
My question is, what are your thoughts about the legalization of marijuana and how that might reduce the pressure and the cost of our corrections system? And I'll take my answer off air.
Yeah, I'm not really sure one way or the other. I'm not in favor of the legalization, but I've seen what other states have done, and I see arguments both sides to and from. Surely, when we get the simple possessions of marijuana, which are very few cases that we have, we divert those cases. We try not to spend a whole lot of time. We generally get possession of marijuana cases with guns, and which causes us a little more concern. So. Surely, I think there's a lot of folks that have been hurt by the criminal justice system and marijuana charges, particularly in the past. So I really think it's something that we need to take a look at. We just do not focus at our office on small possessions of marijuana, try to divert those people out of the system. In fact, we're working on more things to do more diversion now.
Well, thank you, Hiller Moore. It's always
a
pleasure. Look forward to an update soon.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for the work you do. Mark Ballard is with us, and not only the Capitol Bureau Chief for the Advocate, but the husband of the great Donna Britt, who last night gave her farewell newscast at WAFB after more than 37 years. Mark was right there, as he should be, and their handsome son. And Mark Ballard, it was quite an emotionally gripping evening.
Yeah, and I thought it was. It was emotionally gripping, and I thought, well done. I mean, you know, done with a lot of dignity.
Yes, indeed. Everything about Donna Britt is classy, and I think it's worth repeating. I think you may have told this story before, but you met as a result of media, didn't you?
Well, yeah. I was doing part-time work when I was at LSU. At WYNK, you know, the nighttime stuff and when folks needed to take a day off and all of that sort of thing. And she was their big-time afternoon drive anchor woman, and we just, you know, got to be friends, and then it grew from there. Actually, it really grew after I was kind of roped into doing a commercial. It was for Billy Ann's Flowers up in Baker, I believe. And I was to play her husband, and who, you know, gave her flowers. So that's really where it all started.
Well, and 30-some years later, it's still going strong. And we wish you and Donna very well. But Mark has a full-time gig that occupies most of his day at the Capitol. And when we talk about lawmakers and seven special sessions, it also means Mark Ballard has had seven special sessions in the last 29 months. And a couple of these lawmakers have said they're not going to take their pay. I would not suggest journalists doing the same thing, but I can't understand public officials who realize that the public is quite mystified as to why they can't get things done, saying, look, enough is enough.
Yeah, well, believe me, we need our pay for covering all of this. That movement hasn't caught on the way we thought. A lot of the legislators, are basically supposed to be a part-time job, and they have been putting aside their businesses for months at a time. We're talking about going into a seventh special session, and so that pay is necessary for them, I guess, to continue working, to continue surviving with so many special sessions. On the other hand, they probably need to get down and come to some sort of an agreement and kind of fix this thing.
It doesn't look like that an agreement is imminent, though. It's going to take more arm-twisting, and we've been down this road so far. The 70 votes needed in the House, they just haven't materialized.
Well, the talk right now is between a third of a penny and a half of a penny. So that's 0.3% and 0.5%. And the talk now is going to 0.4% of retaining that penny that's about to expire at the end of the month. And that may be where they end up doing it, but they're still, if they do that, then there's still going to be some significant cuts in the state services that will happen. Right now, the budget is fit as if they were to pass retain the 0.5, the half cent of the sales tax that's expiring, so that if they go to 0.4, there will be cuts in state services.
David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on the air with Mark Ballard.
Good morning, gentlemen. There's a column in the New York Times today in the editorial section by Stephen Moore, a fellow with the Conservative Heritage Foundation, praising Judge Richard Leon, who ruled in the AT&T Time Warner case. It was a fabulous decision. And furthermore, he states that the case should have never gone to trial. The Trump Justice Department, and I'm reading between the lines, essentially brought that case at enormous expense to the taxpayers simply because President Trump has a vendetta against CNN, which, of course, is owned by Time Warner.
All right. Well, that's more of a national story. But, Mark, we're seeing, as we did in South Carolina this week, Mark Sanford made the mistake of criticizing Donald Trump, a Republican. He lost his congressional seat. Is it going to be very difficult for any Republicans and maybe even the Democratic governor in Louisiana to criticize the president?
Well, I think so. I think that we're more conservative than South Carolina. And I think that why we're seeing some of the problems that we are in trying to get this budget passed is the fear among many of the Republicans that someone from the right is going to attack them, that someone even more conservative is going to attack them for, you know, voting for increasing a sales tax in this case. So, I mean, I think that we're seeing that. We're seeing the outcome of that in the fact that we've had 7 special sessions so far.
And Senator Kennedy is calling on the governor to resign, and he's repeated it, so he's had time to think about it. Senator Kennedy is a man who knows the political atmosphere pretty well, and he obviously thinks this will play well, but he did get excoriated on the editorial page of The Advocate yesterday. What's going on with our junior senator?
I think he likes attention. We've known that from following him as a state treasurer for 16 years and now as a U.S. senator. He likes the attention, and he generally, and this is not just what is unique for Governor Edwards, but he did it to Governor Blanco, and he did it to Governor Foster, and he did it to Governor Jindal as well. And so he's basically throwing, I guess, the red meat out for that percentage of the very conservative Republican side. And, you know, it plays well with them. I don't know how it's going to play overall in a statewide election, but he's certainly grabbing attention. There's something that you need to recall, though. I mean, if you put it together, is that on that very day, Steve Scalise said that emphatically that he wasn't interested in it. You know, they're politicians, so nothing is really emphatic. But he was very clear in saying that he was not interested in running for governor, which kind of throws it open to him, and it was a nice timing.
And then today Senator Kennedy is quoted in The Advocate as saying he has not made up his mind, but he has polling data, he says, which shows he could and perhaps would win if he gets in the race. He's giving a lot of hints that he is going to be a candidate.
But he has done this over and over again. I mean, this is the way that he has always kind of lined up his races, was pretty much the same sort of way of, you know, everybody's talking to me, the polls are showing that I would do well, and he goes right up until the time to qualify and or right before, you know, when it's important to kind of declare yourself, and then he decides one way or the other.
But to put it in perspective, we are now inside 16 months before the next election, October 12th of 2019. It is getting closer and closer. It would seem that if somebody is going to seriously challenge the governor, it will have to be someone who is well-known and capable of raising a large campaign war chest, and Senator Kennedy may be the best hope for those who want the governor to be defeated.
And that's maybe what he's angling for, because you're right. When we get to about a year before the election, you know, you need to be in there and you need to have everything kind of lined up. And if you're someone like Senator Sharon Hewitt from over in Slidell, who is not as well known, she needs to kind of get going on this, you know, now and lining up, getting her ducks in a row now. And this kind of freezes the field for only those Republicans or politicians in general to be able to jump in, you know, with that year left.
Well, Governor Edwards and many lawmakers will probably be judged harshly if something does not happen in the next few weeks as far as resolving the fiscal cliff. And, Mark, nothing is certain at the Capitol.
No, nothing is certain. I mean, I'm hopeful that they are able to kind of come to some sort of an agreement when we start the special session on Monday. And it's going to be going through the middle part of the following week.
Okay, we do have to roll. But thank you, Mark Ballard. We'll be calling again next week. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback and topic suggestions. Email us at talk@talklouisiana.org. Talk Louisiana is a production of WRKF in Baton Rouge.